This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
Well, it's a beautiful day. There's clouds. It's cool. It's, what, 73 or something like that?
Yeah.
And
beautiful.
I had a job up on North Bank Road up near Glide today and this week, in fact. So I left the job early and went up to North Umpqua a little ways just to look at it and see. You know, I went up to the where the fish hatchery used to be.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And they got Swiftwater Park across the road there. And
yeah.
Stood there and looked at that beautiful river, and the sun was shining. It was like, oh, I think up there it was like 64 or 63, something like that, you know.
And nice.
It was nice. You know, just we got a beautiful river, we got a beautiful state, and too bad our politics aren't beautiful, but that's
what I was just thinking. I was just thinking some of these news commentators ought to take a trip up there.
Yeah, and just sit there and watch the river for a while and look around and enjoy.
Just relax.
Yeah, relax. Mellow out. Anyway, it's a beautiful day. It was a beautiful day up there. Like I said, the sun was shining and gorgeous. So anyway, hopefully I can impart some good knowledge here to you listeners out there. I want to thank you for listening. And this show is about ideas and advice, and we're open to questions. And if you have a question about any part of your landscape, doesn't matter what I'm talking about, interrupt me. It's okay. I don't mind. The number is 673-4464. 673-4464. I'll say it again a couple more times.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I forget to say it in the middle of the show.
But yeah, we get too carried away.
I know. I'm on a roll, man. I'm on a roll, yeah.
What's your number?
I don't know. Oh, boy. And anyway, this week really has been a pleasant change weather-wise. I mean, it's, I'm not a fan of 100-degree weather. And I'm not a fan of 90-degree weather, actually. I think 80's a good, you know, just stop at 80, we're good. The sun shines, it's fine, you know.
About Southern California style.
Yeah.
Well, kind of.
Well, maybe.
Yeah,
but then you got to breathe in the smog and the fog and all that.
All the other stuff.
I know. But, you know, in our state, when it gets to be, you know, cloudy and a little bit breezy, and finally we got some rain, oh, boy. And, you know, after a prolonged hot time, it was a real blessing to have the rain and cooler temperatures.
Oh, yeah.
You know, had I been in charge of the weather, I would have ordered the rain at least a month, at least a month or more ago, you know, and brought it, you know, an inch a week would have been perfect. And with 80-degree temps that I would also manufacture, it would be a nice place.
There you go.
things would be green.
Heaven on earth, so to speak.
There you go. Anyway, I'm really thankful for what we did receive, okay? And I'm not complaining. I'm thankful. And while the rain didn't put out all the fires, it at least slowed down the intensity and the spread and gave the firefighters a little bit of a break. There's, like I said, I was up there in Glide, and the fire camp is right there next to the highway. Mm. There's still 100-plus tents and things and fire engines, and there was a big old helicopter landing right in there. And I mean, I'm thinking, I wonder when those guys are going to go home. You know,
that's probably what they're wondering,
yeah,
too.
They're probably saying, I got to get out of this place. I got to get out of this place. Help me. But at least they've got some sort of a reprieve with this cooler weather. I know there's still a lot of hot spots, and I'm sure there'll be hot spots, you know, that are burning in big, massive root systems over the winter, even though it's wet. Mm-hmm. But they've done a great job, and it was a great catastrophe, and every time I see it, I want to cry. It's it's just devastating, all the ugly dead trees sitting around there.
But there is some coming back.
Yeah, there are.
Slowly, but they're coming back.
Yeah, and I spoke about that last week or the week before, and, you know, that it seems like every week those trees that I saw 3 weeks ago, they're even taller now.
Nice.
You know? Yeah, I mean, they look like giant shrubs, but that's because they got this root system down there that used to support a huge tree.
Yeah.
And that huge tree got burned off and cut down. And so that root system, it didn't know. It just pushes the juice, and you got 40 stems coming up from the same root. I mean, it's good to see some green up there. That's what we want. And, you know, so seeing a positive change in the natural vegetation gives me some hope. And now that it rained, it even looked better. It looks, there's even green grass sprouting in these brown fields.
Jeez.
In front of my house. And it's been brown, you know, since last spring, because mm-hmm. I've been doing some construction work and I've had trucks and stuff like that in there. And so I didn't mow it, and it got beat to death. And I fell a big redwood down there, and I haven't totally cleaned that up yet. So, and after that first rain, I looked out there and I thought, man, is that grass turning green?
Oh.
And I took a closer look, and there are little tiny sprouts coming up that lay dormant all summer long.
Wow.
But the seed was in there, or the roots were in there.
Yeah.
And as soon as they got some moisture, they went, whoa, we got to take advantage of this. And they jumped up, you know.
It's our turn.
It's my turn. Give me some more rain. Oh, gosh, it's good. But like I say, it's sprouting up in fields. And so I started paying attention as I'm driving, you know, from my place in. I go through, you know, a lot of different ranches and farms and things like that. And you can see spots of green things coming up already. And
nice.
I thought, whoa, that's good. Hey, we're going to make it. We're okay. But And then those leaves were, I mean, those fields were just dry as a bone, you know. They were so dry, you know, the dead grass almost looked white, you know. No, I mean, if a spark got in that stuff, it would explode.
Mama.
Yeah, and even the leaves on the trees don't look as bad as they did 2 weeks ago. You know, with that hot, scorching sun, you've got the leaves that they're just kind of, you know, scrunched a little bit, mm-hmm. and some of them are brown and crumpled and, you know, prematurely falling off the trees. But they don't look so bad and dry and crisp anymore. So, and
nice.
Even the South Umpqua River looks better. I mean, I take note of, you know, the levels when I go over the two or three bridges every day that the South Umpqua flows under, and I see rocks. I've watched rocks appear all summer long, and as the water dropped. And, you know, like last week after that first rain, I thought, wow, there's not as many rocks showing. So obviously in the mountains,
the rain
gets hung up on the peaks doesn't mm-hmm. move so fast. So more rain falls there and it eventually goes down through the watershed and we receive it. And that's good. Yeah. So so when the South Umpqua looks good, hey, you know we're in good shape.
But not necessarily swimming at 4
no,
in the morning.
No, 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 not that. Or even in the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, yeah,
some places in the South Umpqua I would pass on.
But Lordy.
Anyway, the subject for today, so much for my soliloquy. Now, the subject for the day, it could be lawn renovation. Uh-huh. You know, it's cooler. Nicer, your dead looking lawn needs to be brought back into shape, and you do that by thatching, aeration, and fertilization. And like I explained many times in the past, thatching is when you comb all the dead grass out, mm-hmm. so that you can actually see ground. The first thing is, and I always say don't mow short, but this is one time where you mow it short. Get all the dead stuff as short as you can, so that when you thatch it, you get most of the other dead stuff that's underneath. Mm-hmm. It comes up, and then when you aeration is all is taking a machine and it pulls plugs of soil out of the lawn, and you have to have a short lawn to be able to reach in there, and then you fertilize. And that way, and then you pump the water to it, and then that way the oxygen gets into the roots, the fertilizer gets into the roots, and all of a sudden, boom, within, 10 days or less, you've got a green lawn.
Somebody should have showed my dad that.
Well, bring him on in. I'll tell him.
Come on down.
Yeah, he's moved out of town, huh?
Yes.
You know, there's less stress on a lawn in cool weather, and cool weather is anything under 80 degrees, okay? It's just less stress. Everybody gets stressed. Even trees, lawns, and all that get stressed when it's that. Maybe not if you're a surfer or a lifeguard. Probably not. But so whatever you do, whatever you do to your lawn this time of year, it's going to be a plus. As we go into the fall, it's going to be healthier. It's going to survive. It's going to, and you can reseed if you got some bare spots. Yeah, good time to reseed. It's okay. It'll work. And as I've said in the past, the stronger the lawn is going into the winter, the better it's going to be when spring arrives, and it's going to grow, you know, very green and lush very quickly.
Be a lot more healthier.
Exactly, exactly. So lawns need to be cleaned. Lawns need to be thatched and get the dead stuff out and aerated so the fertilizer and the water can actually get into the root systems. That's the whole purpose of that. And like I say, you can take a totally brown, dead-looking lawn and turn it around within a 10-day period or 15 days.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. You know, the roots are in like dormancy. They're there. They haven't gone away. They haven't disintegrated or anything. Yeah. It's just the top that's been beat to death with the heat and the 99 degrees and 105 degrees day after day after day after day. And then they give it up, man. Okay. But the root systems are still alive. So when you go through and do the treatment, the root systems respond. They want to grow. They want to live. They want to manufacture, you know, new green grass so they can eat because photosynthesis takes place in the green leaves, et cetera.
Sounds like a country song.
Yeah, I'll sing that at the commercial. It's good. Yeah, all right. When you do that, it's the things are just revitalized. It's like, wow, okay. Now, the fall planting of trees and shrubs is more effective, and you get a better bang for your buck than spring planting. Now, spring planting is okay if you do it correctly, but fall planting, when it's like this, there's really no stress to the plant. No stress to the tree or the shrub or whatever, because it's cooler and the ground is damp. Mm-hmm. So, and then you might give it a shot of water and vitamin B1 when you plant it, and then it sits there all fall, all winter, into the spring, and there's been no stress because there's been no real heat or it hasn't been grown because it's basically dormant. So then when spring rolls around, it busts out of the ground. I mean, it grows. And so fall planting really is better than spring planting. You can do the same thing in spring, but you got to take a lot more steps. It's a lot more time consuming and a little bit more expensive.
Why not let Mother Nature do it?
Yeah, let Mother Nature have her way there and go for it. But, you know, the plants, like I say, when you get them in the fall, they'll still put out new roots. Even though it's fall, even though it's cool, the little tiny hair roots will still begin to take hold in the new soil you put in with the plant when you plant it. New soil, you know, nice soil, not clay, rocks, and that kind of thing. And so by the time April rolls around, it's well rooted.
It's ready to
roll. It's going. It has a big head start there. In the summer, you know, you can do the same thing, but you have to take, like I say, more time and be more careful with your watering, your fertilizing, and your soil mix, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You can make it happen, but fall's great. There's very little or no stress. Now, like I said, in the spring, planting needs more attention to detail. Overwater can occur, and I'm dead on overwatering. I mean, I beat that to death all the time because people do it so much.
You should water like around 2 in the afternoon on a 100-degree day, right?
Yeah, right. And make sure you get a lot of water on the leaves. So they can curl up real quick before sundown, yeah. Right. But, you know, and in the spring, you know, people get hot to plant and they do it and they do the soil mix right and they get the plant in right and then they give it a good shot of water. And we still might have some clouds and an occasional rain and it's, you know, cooler. It's not 80s or 90s. It's like, you know, 70s, 60s, that kind of thing. But those roots are growing. And then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, no pun intended, the sun may shine for like 3 or 4 days in a row, and the temperature hits like 75 degrees, And that doesn't mean it's time to water because the roots are still damp from the day before or the week before.
Yeah, you don't want to drown them.
Right. No, you don't. Yeah. It rots the roots. And when you rot the hair roots, it can't bring any nutrition from the soil up into the tree.
You're dead in the water, so to speak.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, yes. But so in the spring, if you're planting in the spring or even in the summer, always check the soil for about 3 or 4 inches down. And if it's damp, leave it alone.
Yeah.
You know, don't do anything. But if it's dry, go ahead and give it a good shot of water, maybe once a week or maybe every 2 weeks, depending on your soil, depending on the foundation soil that you have underneath. Mm-hmm. And like I said, plants die more often from overwater than dryness, period.
Speaking of which, we got to pay the bills.
We got to pay the bills. Let's pay the bills.
All right. We'll be right back. What's our number there, guy?
673-4464.
All right, we'll catch you on the other side of the break.
Don't spring those tough questions on me like that.
Just want to see if you're still awake.
I was, barely.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, that moment of silence was brought to you as a public service announcement of the Roseburg Public Library.
Yeah, I think he hit the wrong button. Don't let him fool you. Okay, I was talking about watering plants in the spring and not killing them, okay? Now, if you have a sprinkler system in that time of year, you may want to cut back on water frequency and volume. Right now, you can still have your sprinkler system on, but you know, do it sparingly. For instance, if your summer watering schedule is like 4 days a week for 45 minutes a whack, cut it back to like 3 days a week for 25 minutes. And then as the weather cools and we get more rain, you just keep cutting it until the ground is sufficiently moist. You can, you know, pull the plug for the year. It's okay. Mm. It's as it gets cooler and wetter, bingo, reduce it, get rid of it. And when it really rains, shut her down. Don't even mess with it.
Don't do it.
It's good. It save you some bucks, too. Water ain't cheap anymore, and apparently it's getting more expensive as we speak because it's getting to be scarce.
Ah.
Talk to a Klamath Falls farmer. He'll tell you all about it. Anyway.
Now also have kind words for politicians.
Yeah. Another fall job. Here's a fall job for you.
Okay.
Is to remulch your plant beds. It's a good time to do that. You got the weeds killed. Everything's clean. You know, and the mulch after a while. Let's say you put in 3 inches of mulch 3 years ago.
Right.
Well, if you go out there and check it, there's probably about an inch left. Because some of it gets, you know, blown away or eroded if it's on a slope. But it decomposes and becomes part of your soil, and you really can't tell that it's mulch anymore because it's decomposed. It's actually feeding the soil in a good way, and hence feeding the plants that are in it in a good way too. But it needs to be remulched once in a while, every 3, 4, 5 years. You know, only you can know how much you put on it and refurbish really good, and it's going to protect your plant root systems from severe winter cold, should we have that again. You never know.
No.
Or new mulch is going to give your landscape a fresh new look, and it smells good. I think it smells good. And new mulch is going to help keep the weed growth to a minimum, and new mulch adds nutrition long term to the root systems. And new mulch is going to help you keep any erosion to a minimum if your parts of your yard are on a slope. And we got a downpour, gully washer, rainstorm run through there, and you only got an inch of mulch, it's going to wash most of that away. But if you got 3 or 4 inches, that water is going to be absorbed into the mulch and slowed down so it doesn't cause the erosion.
If
it does cause erosion, it causes a minimal amount in comparison to if you only had an inch of mulch or half an inch of mulch sitting there. So
makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. and it saves your yard, and it saves your plants, and it saves you from doing a lot of labor the following spring
that you already
did once or twice. But you know, fall maintenance means less frantic yard work in the spring. Okay, that's the boil it right down to that. And remember, a healthy yard is a beautiful yard. And
like the Boy Scout,
like
motto.
The Boy Scouts, yeah.
Be prepared.
That's our motto. Be prepared. Put your mulch on.
Don't take it off.
Yeah, right. Okay. Now, you'll have noticed probably, maybe you didn't, but I do. I notice all these things. You'll notice since it has rained that there will be a new crop of noxious weeds popping up.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. They're going to beginning to be, you know, sprouting in your plant beds or along your driveway or coming up through the cracks in the sidewalks. And they're small now, right? They're a little, look at the little weeds
coming up.
They're
little babies right now.
Yeah, little baby weeds coming up in the blacktop. Isn't that nice? But in another 2 weeks, if this weather, you know, continues like it is, they'll be twice as large. And you can either pull them. And when you pull them, make sure you get the roots because if you
pull them, break your back, but you can pull them.
Yeah, you can lay down on the ground and pull those puppies. But if you leave the roots in, they're just going to pop right back up. It's like pruning. When you pull the grass and the roots stay, it's like a radical pruning. And they go, oh, man, we can't have that. And they pop right back up very quickly, stronger.
Stronger than ever.
Yeah, and they kind of stick their little tongues out at you and say, hey, you can't hurt us.
Take this.
Yeah. So, you know, pulling weeds is very time consuming. So my suggestion is to spray them with Roundup. I love Roundup. Roundup is one of my favorite sprays. Roundup is going to kill the weeds right down into the root systems. It is safe. It's safe. I don't care what the TV commercials tell you. It is safe if you pay attention on how you're mixing it and the application and how you're handling the product. You follow the directions. Don't rush it. Just make sure you do everything. Wear gloves, wear a long sleeve shirt, you know, whatever it takes to protect yourself. And then when you start to apply this material, don't spray it if there's wind. You know, because the wind's going to drift it over. It's a spray. It's a mist, kind of. And it might spray, you know, get onto your rhododendrons or your azaleas or your pampas grass or something
like
that.
Or your bedroom window.
Well, that doesn't matter. The bedroom window won't die. It'll just get ugly. But, and you know, like I say, go slow. Don't miss any of the weeds. Go slow. Give each weed its own potion, and you're going to see good results.
Yeah.
And as long as we have some sunshine, you know, a few hours a day, whatever, it's going to work. Now, when it's cooler, like we're getting cool now, it works a little slower, but it's working nonetheless because the plant is not generating as much energy now than it was in May, for instance. There's quicker death to weeds when it's warmer, so that's how that works. But then after a few weeks, you notice there's some more little weeds starting to pop up where you already sprayed, and there's some that are still green. Spray it again. I mean, get a handle on it before next April.
Oh, Lord.
And don't, you know, if we get a week and a half of rain, you know, all bets are off of what I just said. But if you stay on top of it, you reduce your maintenance time and your yard work by a very large percentage. It's when you let things go and say, I'll get it next week. I'll get it next month. And I'm guilty of that myself at my own place. And I go, then when I go to do it, I go, oh, man, what did I wait so long? What? How dumb was I? I do this for a living, and I let my yard go like that? What's wrong? So, but sometimes it happens, you know?
I've heard some people have lost their little puppies out in the jungle out there.
Where?
Out there and there and all the weeds.
Oh, little puppies?
Yeah. Huh. They let it go and grow and grow.
Oh,
the puppy goes out there, and they can't find him.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe somebody stole the little puppy.
Puppy, yeah, that's probably more like it.
Now, here's the cool thing. If you got poison oak and blackberries, which I have both at my place.
I was going to ask you about those.
Yeah, blackberries, they're great things. They grow in spite of anything. Man.
Oh, they love us.
They grow out of freeways and everything else.
Yes.
But they're a problem, and if you have that problem, you can spray them with Crossbow. Roundup won't touch them. Roundup might discolor their leaves for a week or two, and they'll sprout new leaves. But Crossbow will kill poison oak and blackberries. It takes a couple of 3 weeks, depending, again, on the weather, for real death to occur to them, but it's going to work. And these plants are really tough to kill. But with regular spraying, like i.e. twice a year, in like late summer and fall, that's the best time to get maximum kill on blackberries and poison oak. And if some new sprouts come up in the spring, hey, nail them again, and that's you're probably done with your poison oak or your blackberry problem.
Nice.
But if you try to pull them, you've got to cut them. You know, some people will cut them and maybe spray them then. Well, there's nothing getting on the leaves. The poison is just getting on the stems, and the stems are you miss a lot because the stem is small where leaves are big, and there's a lot of them. So that's why you want to spray them when the leaves are on. And like I say, August, September, even into October, if the sun is shining, it's a good time to spray. Because
that's where I went wrong.
What'd you do?
I cut, what was that, a rental place in the 80s. Uh-huh. Went out there and cut all those stinking blackberries out of it. And then I sprayed poison on them.
Yeah. You did it a little bit backwards.
Backwards.
If you spray first and then when they're good and dead, go out and whack them then. Voila, you got it. Now, I've had
I helped them grow back.
Yeah, you did. they said, hey, thanks. You gave us a haircut.
Yeah.
But in some of my trees down my field 1 year, I did an experiment because there was poison oak climbing up Douglas fir trees. And it goes and it kind of clings to the bark and just keeps going up.
Yep.
And I thought, I wonder if it would hurt the tree if I sprayed the poison oak with Crossbow while it's attached to the tree. So I just did it to a couple of trees and did not hurt the trees, and the poison oak died.
Nice.
It died very quickly all the way down. So that can work too.
So
otherwise, you got to pull. and if you got poison oak that's 30 feet or 20 feet up in a tree, you're not going to be pulling that stuff down because it gets into the bark. But if you spray the bottom part as high as you can reach, then it kills the plant and goes down into the roots, and naturally the top 20 feet dies because there's no food supply.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay.
And it didn't hurt the tree. And I've tried it on several types of trees as well, and it was good to go. Do we have a break or something?
Yes, sir. Well, you're getting good at this.
Well, it's tiny.
Exactly. We'll be right back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show right here on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We are back.
Okay, I was wondering, you got to push some buttons over there to get back, don't you?
One of my friends didn't want to get off the phone.
Well, you should have phoned out the door.
Probably. But anyway, we are back. And
if you have a question on any of this, it's 673-4464. And it doesn't matter what I'm talking about. Just ask your question, and I'll give you an answer. And most of the time, it's right. Because I've already made all the mistakes.
You know?
I'm done with the mistakes. But anyway, I was talking about in our last segment about killing poison oak and blackberries.
Yes,
And how futile it is to try to just cut them down. And my partner here tried it and confessed to me that they all came back right after they did that. And Crossbow, and I mentioned Crossbow as the spray. I've tried other sprays, and they kind of work a little bit, but Crossbow really works. And it's the most expensive one, of course, but a little bit goes a long way. And if you buy a quart of it or a pint, I don't know if it comes in a pint, but it comes in a quart, and comes in gallons, too, for 300 and something bucks.
Wow.
Yeah, but it'll last you a long time because you're not using a lot of that material. Mm-hmm. And if you got the normal size yard, I mean, you've got a couple year supply there for, you know, $39 or $29.95 or whatever a quart costs. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but it really works, and you can spray the other stuff that's on sale, and you'll say, yeah, it killed it, and then 2 weeks later, you say, gosh, how come it's growing back, man? But anyway. Do your homework, look at what's on the market, and then think about what I said. Crossbow really works. Now, here's another fine, fun thing you can do in the fall. Fall planting of bulbs is usually very successful. So you want to plant some bulbs, and there's bulbs in the box stores and nurseries, etc., and they're dormant. They're just bulbs. They're just laying there in a bag or a box or something like that. But you go ahead and plant them this time of year, and next spring you'll see your handiwork in full bloom. And one of the toughest bulbs, I think, this is just my opinion, are daffodils. I mean, daffodils seem to grow in out of rocks, for crying out loud. And they come in many colors. They're not just yellow, but that seems to be the most daffodils you see around here are the yellow ones, and they might have a tinge of orange on them and something like that. But like I say, there's a lot of different colors that you can find, and the best part of daffodils is they multiply and they spread. So you plant one on, you know, the bank in the backyard that's not growing anything, and the next year you got two or three, and the next year you got six or seven, and the next year you got 40 of them. Mm. I mean, that's what they do. They multiply, and you know, they're better than cats, for crying out loud. And they're tough. They're something that you don't have to mess with. Animals don't eat them. Snow, rain, and cold, nothing hurts them. I mean, when we had Snowmageddon, mm-hmm. you know, the bulbs were starting to come up at that time of year. And you know, I thought, well, let's see what happens. Well, when the snow finally melted after, 10 days or something like that, hey, there were the bulbs. They were doing their thing. They were green and pushing through the, you know, the cold.
They were just insulated.
Yeah, very, very much so. Like the igloo effect. How's that?
Yeah.
But that's the best part of them. They don't need any care, truly, no care. I mean, it's just that's how they are. Now, I've seen them growing in pastures, mm-hmm. surrounded by cattle and horses growing amongst the flowers. And I've mentioned this before, there's a place out on in Looking Glass area, Melrose area, and I'd say maybe a 4 or 5 acre pasture, and the guy's got some horses and some cows, you know, maybe 15, 20 of them, and they're out there grazing in the spring, and the daffodils are blooming, and they're not eating the daffodils. They're maybe stepping on some, but there must be 10,000 daffodils in this field, probably more, but you know, that's my best guess. I'm going by at 50 miles an hour, 45 miles an hour, hard to count. but every year for the past, 20 years, they've been coming in and getting and more and more and more of them. And if he doesn't rip up the field with a tractor or something, the whole field's going to
be
daffodils.
Taken over.
You're going to have to take the cows and the horses somewhere else to eat.
You said they won't eat them.
No, they won't. Deer don't eat them. Nothing eats them.
Starve to death.
Yeah, so that's how tough they are. That's my point there.
Yeah.
They don't need any care. And unless the cow steps on them, they don't die. And even then, they don't die because they just regroup and grow another stem. Now, late fall and winter is the best time to purchase yard tools. Why would I want to get yard tools in the middle of December or anything else, you know? Well, because that's when they're the cheapest. Because nobody's buying them, so they reduce the prices. That's why.
Yep. And, supply and demand.
Exactly. And, you know, you need some pruning shears? Hey, you'll find them. There'll be, you know, dozens to choose from. Need a new mower? That's a perfect time to buy a mower because the price is down. And and sprayers. Those are just to name a few things, but there's all kinds of yard tools that you could use. So buy them in the winter. Buy them in the winter. Don't buy them in the spring. The price is up. Buy them in the summer. The price is up. So just like anything else. So if your old mower needs to be replaced, start checking the ads or go visit your favorite equipment store or one of the box stores over there. And, you know, just take advantage of the season. It's okay. It works. And and as the leaves continue to fall, you'll begin to see branches more completely because the tree is not, it's leafless. I mean,
it's naked.
It's naked, yeah. And this is the time to plan your pruning schedule. You go, okay. Because now you can see the body of the tree. Mm-hmm. You can see what you actually need to prune. And then you can remove your cross branches, little small branches that don't do anything. They're just in the way.
Right.
And you leave all the good ones. And, you know, get rid of the small twigs and stuff like that. Because they don't produce any flowers. They don't produce any fruit. And they're usually growing in an odd way, you know, and they don't add any beauty to the tree. Yeah, I mean, I've seen branches curled around other branches, and you go, why didn't somebody prune that off, especially on a fruit tree? Because in the winter, I get a lot of calls to prune the fruit trees in people's yards and stuff like that. And some of those fruit trees hadn't been pruned in, you know, say 10 years or something like that. And consequently, you get a lot of odd branches, and they say, well, haven't had much fruit in the last 5 years. Well, it's because you got too many stinking branches, too many leaves, and the energy is going in branches and leaves because you let it grow.
And
I've spoken about this 100 times too, but you break them down, you cut them way back, you thin them out, and you're going to get your fruit. That's as simple as that. And fruit trees, you know, once you get them into that position, you know, an old tree into that position where it's viable, then you prune them every year to maximize your fruit production. And, you know, for the following summer, you've got a bunch of apples. You got a pickup load of peaches or plums or, you know, apricots, whatever.
Yeah, right.
But, I've got clients that I do that for them every single year without fail. And they get all the fruit they need, all the fruit they want, plus their neighbors get all the fruit that's growing in their yard
because
they got so much of it, they got to give it away.
Yeah, you know,
that's how that works. So
be ashamed to.
Yeah,
waste
you
it.
Can't just throw it away, man.
Oh.
But it's like most people when they ask me questions, they say, "Well, my tree is doing this," and it. And there's a lot of branches, but the fruit was small and it didn't come to, you know, real ripening. And then it sat there and kind of rotted. There was just a few good apples or just a few good, you know, plums or whatever. And I ask them, when's the last time you pruned it? Well, I didn't. I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
I says, well, are you afraid to prune? Well, doesn't that kill the tree or hurt the tree? No, it doesn't. No, you know, like cutting your fingernails doesn't hurt your finger. You don't bleed to death, but you cut your fingernails or your toenails, and there's no pain involved, and they still grow back, you know.
Unless you get down farther,
quick. But the same thing happens with a fruit tree or a shade tree, whatever. And I give them instructions on how to do it, or I go, you know, they hire me to do it, or hire me and my crew to go do that. And it's when it's done, they kind of look at it in amazement and say, well, gee whiz, you sure took a lot off. I says, yeah, but wait till next spring and summer when you see all the fruit that old apple tree will produce. As simple as that. And then I try to, I give them instructions about, you know, the orchards around here in Douglas County. We got a lot of good orchards. You know, Cruz has got orchards. Mm-hmm. Brozai's got orchards. There's other smaller farmers that have orchards and fruit stands. I said, well, in, you know, January or February, take a little ride out to River Forks Park or Singleton Park, and you'll be going through a lot of orchards. Cruz's orchards, for instance, are out of that way. And watch how they prune their trees. You'll see a row of unpruned trees that they haven't gotten to yet, but that's how much they grew last year. And they got big, long, tall branches, not really long, but they're taller. And then you see what the finished product looks like right next to in the next row, where they cut all that stuff that grows up, and they cut it very short, and they let the side growth grow, because it's going to be exposed to the sun, it's going to be exposed to the rain or the sunlight, the weather, and that's where the fruit is produced on those mature branches. The fruit is not produced on new wood, the stuff that goes, you know, straight up. And every year you have it. Every year it's going to happen. It never stops happening, but you need to cut it back. Sometimes they're, well, I don't know, or they'll cut it back and say, could you stop by and take a look at my tree and see if I did it right? And I'll go by and look, and I'll say, well, no, it's okay, but you could have taken this out, this out, this out, and this out. And then I try to tell them that the little tiny branches, again, which are on the inside of the tree, I said, they don't do anything for the tree. They're not going to produce fruit. So cut them all the way back to the main stem. Mm-hmm. And just, like I say, let those side branches grow, the horizontal branches grow out, and just prune anything that's going up, prune it back to about 2 or 3 inches, and you'll see fruit. That's how
there
it goes.
There you go.
Yeah, and when they do that, a friend of mine bought a house out there in Looking, Melrose area again, and the prior owner had a small orchard. And it was very small in that it was fenced too, but it was only like 15, maybe 20 feet wide and 30 feet long. And he had 8 or 10 fruit trees in that space. And the branches were all crossed together from this tree to that tree. Yeah. They were all crossed together. And he says, what do I do with these trees? We didn't have any, not much fruit on them. I says, well, first of all, whoever planted these, they probably bought them when they were real small, so didn't know how to space them. But the trees grow, and if the trees are only 8 feet apart, you're going to have all that competition. And I said, well, here's what you got to do: eliminate 50% of the trees. You just cut them down. I said, yeah, cut them down, because they're not going to do you any good. And I cut them to the ground, and then the remaining trees will have space and sunlight in which to grow. And then I pruned one for him and showed him how to prune them. And by golly, he did that. And that next fall, he had a great crop of apples and pears and
you made
plums.
A believer out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There
and
you
go, well, that's all you got to do? Yeah, that's all you got to do is prune them, Bubbies. They don't die. You don't kill them.
Gotta love it. Hey, we'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here in a couple on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oh, we are back for the final segment on this Wednesday with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Yeah, and I've been talking about fruit tree pruning and other types of pruning, but if you need further info, I guess it would be, there are many books, and unfortunately you can buy them at box stores, but there are many books with color photos of correct pruning methods. It'll say Sunset Book on Pruning, and you open it up, and there's big photos. And here's a tree before they pruned it, here's a tree after they pruned it. And you can see, wow, they did cut a lot out of that thing. They cut, 60% of the tree.
Jeez.
For crying out loud, or even more sometimes.
Wow.
And I've been very drastic on some of my pruning of my own trees, just to see what would happen. And And the result was great. I loved it. And I thought, well, my wife said, will you kill a tree? I said, no, I want to see what happens to it. Because I pruned it harder than I would prune one for you or some client or anything like that. Just to see how it would respond. So that when I go to a client's house and they got a tree that's similar and they want to do this, this, and this, I can say, yeah, that'll work. I do my own experiments all the time there.
Right.
So, but like I say, there's like a lot of books. You can get photos. You can see the correct pruning methods. They'll have a chapter on the different types of pruning tools. And you can learn how to prune correctly and increase your harvest and keep your fruit trees healthy.
So it pays off.
Yeah, it pays off in the long run.
Right.
And once you've done it once, the second time is a lot easier, and after that, you're doing well.
Anything else.
Exactly. It's the first time, if you've never done this kind of thing, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill my tree. No, you're not. Really, you're not. You could almost cut it in half, and it would grow new branches and start over again, for crying out loud.
I'm sure Dad's done that.
Yeah, your dad does. Stories you told me about your dad. Now, if you're still gun shy and just want to learn, hire a tree service or a landscaper to teach you how to prune correctly. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of tree services around, and if you got some big, huge trees, and maybe they've got a bucket, a lift bucket, where they can get up on the tops of these trees, and they lower it down, and they chip it up right there on the spot, etc. And you can see what's happening. You can see how they do it. And then when your tree looks a lot better and it's healthier, and you see the following spring how much more shade it provides for you or what your produce is, you go, yeah, I need to do that more often. So, and if none of this grabs you, just like I said earlier, drive around to the commercial orchards in the wintertime in February and January. You got Cruise Farms, Brosai Orchards, all those places, and see firsthand how much they cut from their fruit trees. And remember, they're in the fruit selling business, so they want to maximize their productivity from their crops, their trees. Is that it?
We're done already.
Wow, 50% sale at Wintergreen, October 18th and 23rd. I'll talk about that next week.
Can't believe it's that time already.
I know, it's amazing. Thank you for listening.
All right, we'll catch you next week.
Yes, sir.